This is called Something with Everything. I'm just going to read the first sections, and then it goes in a very weird direction after that, but well, it starts in a weird direction too. Something with Everything, and this first section is called Overtime. Then came another impossibility, what they called a three-day weekend, an extra day annexed to the standard two-day weekly rest period. But was it a holiday? An emergency? A dead president? Relax, said his boss. It's just an extra day. Enjoy it. Get away. Party. He decided to take overtime instead. Work like usual. Take it home with him. Stay on top of things. Nothing wrong with that. Even though he couldn't quite recall the last unnamed and holidayless three-day weekend since those employee development days of grade school, he was certain he would have done the same thing before. He didn't mind working. As always on the days when there was work to be done, the world outside presented itself as particularly sunny and bright. People were out. He could hear them. Someone on a loudspeaker booming, women laughing, kids singing, dogs, applause, crowds, everyone gone all out. He wasn't interested. Inside, he worked. Now, as any real man would, he too required occasional breaks, but on the whole, few, and less, and more rigidly orchestrated than those of most men. Sometimes, occasionally, and in fact, qualifying as truly rarely, his mind would wander. For instance, a few times he stopped, suddenly hearing the ticking of his detestable new clock, the one he had recently purchased for that very detestability. It had to do with the second hand and how it didn't skip and tick like most second hands. No, this clock only ticked on the minute, on the minute and the hour, opting to be slower, patient, downright grandfatherly in its announcement of time's arbitrary increments than most clocks with their nervous, neurotic, non-stop adherence to the keeping of the smallest, pettiest, chattiest unit of time possible. Its hand was slick, slippery, continuous, with the tick-lack a continuous reminder that time was passing in a manner larger than him. You are dying, said the clock, reminding him of something he already knew, but its oily magician's flow, its parody of time, and yet its absolute accuracy, highlighted the reminder with more tactless ferocity than the many digital faces he surrounded himself with, as if slurring, work. Within a couple minutes and most of his mind's wanderings, his surveying of a minute's tick, he always returned, relieved, refreshed, ready, eager, to do. Other times, it would be the phone. Solicitors, wrong numbers, people needing things he couldn't give, people misjudging him and his needs, people wanting others. When he worked, he let it ring and ring until the machine got it. Usually, nobody left a message. On that night, the first of the three-day weekend, the phone rang endlessly and fatelessly. He tuned it out and turned the piles neatly stacked on his coffee table. The work he had to do wasn't so bad, he thought. He didn't mind it, he told himself. In compensation for it, he would get money, and in fact, because of overtime, they would pay him more. Not more than he deserved, though. In fact, still less than he deserved, just more than usual. The work involved papers, folders, envelopes with windows, numbers and percentages, sentences, signatures, names, addresses, emails, URLs, colons, semicolons, M and N dashes, trademarks, copyrights, ampersands, etc. Sometimes, as he input and output and calculated and claimed, he was not sure what exactly he was doing, but it did not matter. It was work. And in fact, that very mysterious nature of it and its processes could be seen as nice, like all the incomprehensible yet automatic things in the world that just were. Nice. No need to question. Another nice thing. Nobody was asking. His medication did not adversely affect, nor did it actively enhance, he would maintain, the process. That evening he noticed with marked awe that it would just not let up. In its third or fourth ruthless round, he knew he could just not be the bigger person anymore. Ed finally decided to answer the phone. The call. Hello, what are you doing? Although it sounded somewhat familiar, Ed didn't recognize the voice the first time, and the voice, sensing this, repeated again. Hello, what are you doing? Ed thought about it. It hit him. His coworker, LJ. It was the greeting that gave it away. The last time, the only other time he had called, he had greeted Ed with the same odd question. LJ was not quite a friend, but someone who worked at the cubicle next to him. Twice, they had lunched. "Oh, just work," said Ed. "Working." "What?" LJ said. "Whatever happened to the three-a-day weekend?" Ed had nothing to say to this. "Anyway, Ed, I'm calling to make you an offer, and I suppose it also means making you stray from your path." He chuckled hard. Ed had nothing to say to this. "Ed, I want to invite you to a party, one thrown by a very charming woman. Tonight." Ed paused. He had work to do. And yet this man had never asked him anywhere like that before. Ed assumed someone in his position might feel flattered, but he did not fully understand why this man who barely knew him was asking him out to a party. Well, he knew him a bit. Perhaps he too had few friends. In fact, LJ had to be a real outcast. He certainly looked the part. Ed recalled the redness of his exposed scalp, his constant sweaty leather smell, his thin dress shirts, and he thought, here was a man who had not known what it was like to be accepted, ever. Poor LJ, he almost thought, almost, but he did not know this man well enough to pity him, even. Plus, it almost sounded like a date, but he did not know him well enough to be repulsed by him, either. He did not know why he called, why he had invited him, if it was because he thought it was a party Ed would particularly like, if he assumed he knew Ed enough to invite him, if he did know Ed well enough to invite him, if he thought they were friends, if they were friends, if he thought there were more, if they were... Ed shuddered. He said, "I'm sorry, LJ, but I have my work, and a lot of it." LJ snorted. "Please, Ed," he said. The plea fell somewhere in between a sarcastic exasperation and genuine pleading. "This woman who's throwing the party, Ed, she is very charming." Ed began to wonder if it was about the woman. It was possible that LJ was trying to find out what Ed thought of women in general, or more specifically, charming young ones. That is, if she was young, if he had said that, if Ed heard right. "You want to know about her, certainly," continued LJ. "Casper speaks very highly of her, too. Certainly you trust Casper as well." Casper was their manager. They reported to him, and yet he was also their co-worker, part of their team, all ruled by one director who was ruled by one president. Casper, everyone thought, balanced being a good leader and a good co-worker. Casper was liked. Trust was a whole other issue, but on some level, Ed could say he did like him. "Is Casper going too?" Ed asked. "Oh, yes. Does that change things?" That annoyed him. He turned to the table with its simple, straightforward piles of work and told him no, and that he had to go. LJ hung up with a snappy, "Last chance. Good night." It was not entirely, but almost, rude. Ed returned to his work. It was difficult to concentrate, and he found it annoying to confront that. In his head bumbled LJ in a thin lemon dress shirt, so flimsy you could make out his orange hairs paired with his old stiff polyester brown trousers. Ed placed LJ next to Casper in his daily uniform, matching the smart black and white silver cap of hair with the perfect white shirt and the dapper black designer slacks, all of which looked expensive and rare in its plainness. LJ with his snorts and spittle, Casper with his tight smile and focused eyes. What a pair. Still, he had to admire Casper. The charming young woman would undoubtedly take him in his position, that is, if he was not married or taken, details that Ed kept himself out of. Suddenly, a sound he was not used to, the doorbell. When he opened it up and saw it was Casper, he was surprised at not being surprised. Of course, he had figured out where Ed had lived. He did, after all, sign his checks every month. But it was still odd that he had acted on it, that he and LJ were pushing it so much, that the party dictated it, that the event somehow had managed to rope him into their world. "Hello, Ed," said Casper. "Well, I think you know why I'm here. I was en route to this party of LJ's," said Ed. "LJ's? Well, yes, he's going, but I wouldn't have called it that," Ed said. "Oh, right, you know the lady, too." "Well," No is relative, laughed Caspar. But I do, I suppose. Certainly as well as LJ does. Certainly as well as many do. He paused. Many people know her. He paused again. Anyway. The silence felt taut. Ed thought about what to do. He had work, but here was Caspar, his boss, well, both his boss and not his boss, asking him to go out. It could be a test, he thought. Perhaps Caspar was here to make sure he would not go, to see if he would stick to overtime and the rules of work. But that was unlike Caspar. Caspar, he reminded himself, was a good man. He, in fact, liked Caspar okay. And he had come by personally to invite him. That was nice, certainly something he should not pass up. But the degree to which Caspar was a boss-boss was hard to determine. Was he a boss? Was he a co-worker? Was he a friend? More? Oh, Ed thought, disgusted with his confusion. Anyway, Ed absently echoed, please know I am tempted, but as you know, I took the work home and all, and with overtime. Caspar retained his smile and shook his head. Ed, overtime is not a literal science. Did you not eat? Did you not go to the bathroom? Ed nodded. Okay, well, are you deducting those actions from your hours? Ages ago, Ed, in his first overtime stint, had considered that. He had thought there was a person out there who was good enough to do that. He had thought it was the right thing to do, and yet he couldn't actually do it. It was also a petty action, an action some people would find absurd. It was petty, absurd, and yet correct. Confusing. And therefore best not to deal with a thing like that. Ed admitted he wasn't. Well, then, don't take life so seriously. It's not worth it, Caspar paused. Ed could swear something had caught his eye in his living room, and he felt embarrassed that his house was so bare and badly lit. Did most people play music in their homes? Ed was not sure. Caspar, so you'll come, yes? Ed looked back at his home, the stillness, the dining room table with its empty salt and pepper shakers, the single shabby placemat and the pile of work. Maybe, said Ed, feeling annoyed at himself for dipping further into the giving in, and yet already so far into it with just that very maybe that he felt annoyed at feeling annoyed and resisting, therefore adding, maybe just for a little bit. It turns into a crazy party thing that never ends. But that's it. I'm going to stop there.